And I and it's starting off a little bit heavy, but are you hopeful with the youth of today?
Of the youth, you mean where?
Just young people worldwide, are you hopeful with where they're taking, I guess, society right now?
It would be, I think, quite ineffective to criticize someone or even like judge, but actually, I mean, in our concerts and exhibitions, I personally meet, because, for example, after the concerts, I'm signing books, so I have an opportunity to speak with people, and I'm so happy to see when like young people know what is going on, when they feel that it's not just, some news which are not connected with them, but it's actually events in the world which are affecting their life also. I would not say that all people are like that, and a lot of people think that politics are kind of boring and they just should be like should have fun, and this culture of being selfish is also exist now. But I mean, I'm super happy when I see the alternative examples, and a lot of them I see in our concerts. So this make me really hopeful for the future. But I think we have a lot of work to do as well. Yeah.
I think, well, yeah, as much as said, I don't think it's a right thing to kind of to hope for the next generation to change something. I think it is genuinely beautiful to see spark in people, and they can be both young or old. It's just beautiful when you see it. And also sometimes when we think of elder generation, they can raise values, they can share these values to their children. So it's, I think it's very important as well. I wasn't born in a very political family at all. I think Masha as well. But somehow we found this spark and we felt that this is the right thing to do. And yeah, again, in our concerts, we have different, our crowd is so different. It's old people, our age, older, younger, all different kinds. Also, it's very cute to see how sometimes in Europe, usually happens in Europe, and teachers come with the whole class of children, like 14 years old. And then we sometimes discuss what brought them to this concert and what kind of educational system you have in your country. Yeah, but well, I think we often make this connection between young generation and the change, because when we're younger, we're more idealist, I would say. So, yeah. But I think it's important to speak to everybody and inspire them and ask them to join us. Yeah.
Well, speaking of teachers bringing their students, what have you honestly learned from your audience and being out there being engaged, especially the way that both of you are after the shows? What has the audience essentially taught you, and do you maybe even see the show changing from what it originally was to now? Is that a direct relation to, I guess, the audience as well?
We are changing the show because of many reasons, and definitely this is audience time, current political situation, and I think Well, there were so many small moments which actually like made small changes. There was super impressive to see Ukrainian people in our concert and how do they react and what do they say afterwards. And for me personally, it gave me so much support and power to continue, because I mean, if they can hear us even in the situation of horrible war when our country is basically destroying their country, but we can be in the same place, not hating each other and supporting each other as much as we can, it really, I think it's important.
Yeah, that was an incredible moment. After our concert in Hamburg, in the huge Philharmonie, two Ukrainian women, that was, you know, planned, two Ukrainian women came up to the stage and sang the Ukrainian anthem. And after all, they asked us to come up to the stage, and we were standing then together and like crying. And it was great to share our emotions and to be together on one stage. But I also remember lately we've been to the United States, and answering your question about the interaction with the audience, we had a public talk in St. Louis, and obviously the topic of abortion ban came up. And I remember this incredible woman, she came up, she stand up and says, it's not they took our right for abortion, it's us who gave it to them. And that was a very inspiring moment, because lots of people nod and said, oh yeah, actually it is true. And that was very inspiring, because this is what we often say, that freedom is not something that will somebody one day will bring to you. It's something that worth fighting every day. And yeah, this woman really inspired me as well. She was this like hippie-like woman who works with homeless people. So yeah, just very great to see, I would say, I'd call them other fighters. Sometimes they do inspire you as well. I mean, quite often, almost every time.
Well, seeing that it is a fine line, I guess, for lack of a better term, into something as almost a fascist state, and both of you experienced this firsthand, does it get you a little bit worried when you see other countries that are going down the same path? And are you trying to get to those countries first and foremost above it? Of course, you're trying to get everywhere, but are you really trying to get to the places that it looks like something could potentially break at any moment?
Yeah, I mean, democracy is really fragile, and we just try to explain it every time. So there is no one moment when it's kind of normal situation and then next day you have hell. It's always a road. So freedoms are taken one by one. And for us, it's important to, that's why I made an exhibition. That's why it's important to us to show how they done it with our country and give a lesson, like Russia as a lesson of what can happen anywhere. And I mean, when just recently we kind of woke up with the news that United States banned abortion, like I personally never would imagine that I would read this kind of news in my life. Because, I mean, there should be kind of, I don't know, examples. I don't want to say that United States is example. It's like a lot of problems. I would say from police states to like social segregation, but I mean, we tried all the time to look somewhere to like to make an example for us. And at this point, like we are happy to go to Canada, because like for me, Canada is very, let's say, opposite to, in a good way, to United States. So it's still like keeping. And I just we recently been in I opened an exhibition in Montreal, and that was also first time when I seen Quebec and met people there. So it's really important to have, I mean, a good example, but at the same time it's important to remember how easy to crush something which was built for decades with an impact of people who sacrificed their lives for us to have something good.
Yeah, and basically,
too complicated answer, but.
And also, after our US tour, we went to Washington to meet with politicians and members of Congress and other, you know, state officials to remind them about very important of the importance of still helping Ukraine at this stage. And right now it's a very hot topic. So for us, it was very important to talk to people and somehow at least try to influence the situation. We also talked about political prisoners in Russia, people who said not to to this war. And I think with Canada, obviously the situation is much better. And you're about to sign the agreement with Ukraine, the safety guarantees that France and Britain already signed. And that's very great. And Canada is the country with the biggest Ukrainian diaspora in the world. So we are very excited to speak to Canadians and to meet Ukrainians that live there.
Speaking of refugee, like political refugees, you guys lost somebody pretty big recently in Navalny. Do you feel a little bit, I guess, more hesitant in Russia these days? And I guess the fervor towards your group right now, it's, I guess, do you feel even more unsafe now than maybe you even have in the past?
I don't think that both of us are thinking about our safety. Like, you know, there are so many people who are much, much more in danger than us. So, I mean, I can speak about myself. I don't think about it at all. But the murder of Navalny was really shocking, even with the understanding that it could potentially happen. But when it happened, that was a complete shock, because all of us thought that he's the most protected because he's worldwide known. His name knows people whom even don't know anything about, like, Russian politics. He's a symbol, and they choose to kill him first. So that means that none of the political prisoners are, like, they can kill now any political prisoner, anyone they know, or like all of them. And we have around 1,000 of people being in jailed, imprisoned for their position against Putin and against the current war. So for us, it's crucially important to name these people, to remind that they exist, to call for exchange of them, because it's a question of their life now. And also to remind again to the West, do not deal with Putin's state. Do not buy Russian resources, because it's sponsoring of terrorism. Just send Ukraine as much weapons as they need, Because there were so many statements about do not escalating, etc. So I hope that now it's became clear that these are crazy maniacs who can do whatever they want, and they don't give a fuck about your opinion. They don't give a fuck about their reputation. They just will continue this murders and bombing, and they need to be stopped. And they need to be stopped from the West, who should be united in this decision. Because when the West is like not escalating, Russia is making collaborations with North Korea, with Iran, and they are selling weapons to them. They are, I mean, growing in their collaboration. So it's dangerous. It's dangerous not only for Ukraine. Just recently, Putin made a statement that he is going to take a part of Moldova, and Moldova is probably not the last. So it's a crazy trying to like rebuild the empire, and it needs to be stopped.
And I would like to add that I want West to. I want to remind the West that was basically built their union after the Second World War. And back then, to participate in the war with Hitler was a moral choice. And Canada was one of the countries that willingly decided that it's a moral choice to participate in this war, even though Canada or United States were never and could never be a target for Hitler, at least at that stage. And that was a moral choice, because that was absolutely obvious that this is evil that will continue to expand and kill more people, and that should be stopped. So I want West to remind them how beautifully brave they were back then. Because we're dealing with, I don't like to, you know, compare Putin to Hitler. I think it's quite on the surface, let's say,
but
I would say
he's comparing himself.
But if to compare the ambition, his readiness to take more, and this absolute lack of morality, as we see this, as like bombing civilians and killing them and killing people that are already in jail, like Navalny and many other political prisoners and journalists. So I would like to feel this union with those countries that once already made this choice, the right choice in the past, and that made them who they are right now, basically. Because if you think of it, European Union was formed, the United Nations were formed, NATO was formed basically after the war, and with the same mindset that we need to be united in order to protect ourselves and our future from the situation if it will happen again. I would like to all those countries to make a right choice.
I guess, are you surprised that more Russians haven't stepped up at this point to, I guess, try to underhand him, go in there, kill Putin in their own like guerrilla warfare style? Or do you truly think the propaganda in Russia currently is really that strong?
It's not only a question of propaganda. It's, they build a totalitarian state. So to protest in Russia means completely something completely different than protest here. They were taking freedoms one by one all these years. Let's say like from the very beginning, they started from imprisonments and murders of journalists, and they were creating laws and imprison and kill those who are not agree with this. So when they imprisoned us in 2012 for the punk prayer, that was just a beginning of the next step of building totalitarian regime. And then in 2014, when they took annexed Crimea and started the war in eastern part of Ukraine, again, they were at the same time like shutting down the country from the inside. Just today, in 2015, 27 of February, they murdered the loudest voice against the war in 2014, Boris Nemtsov. The most bright, charismatic, amazing politician was killed today, this night, just because of his political position. And he was killed just near the Kremlin walls. And again, the censor of internet, new laws, which like after the full-scale invasion became like super crazy. It's illegal to call the war. It's illegal to hold even like nothing or a small banner if you are alone in any city. It's like the number of years which you can receive for nothing, like for just saying something, not even writing on social media, but even saying something. It's like 8 years, 15 years. And they managed to like to people to be afraid. So it's like 1 million people left after the beginning of the full-scale invasion. But it's only after full-scale invasion. People were living all these years. So I think in total, the amount of people who left the country is starting to be similar to the amount of people who left the country after the Soviet Revolution, after the Bolsheviks Revolution in 2017. So, I mean, it's a big tragedy, but it's unfortunately a little bit invisible for in the global world. But it's happening. And it's not the conditions when it's possible even to like imagine the crowd is going to any square. There's
well, yeah, we can think of the
not possible, but even in these conditions, you've seen like how around Russia people were bringing flowers in the memory of Alexei Navalny. And you probably seen how these people were treated, how they've been beaten with batons. Like in one city, they arrested a man, brought him to the police station, put the gun to his head, and they were asking like why he bring flowers, where he bought flowers, is he gay or not? And these are the conditions. So and we cannot, there are no reports of what is happening in the occupied territories, but it's actually constant tortures and murders in the basements.
Well, there are a bit of like reports from, I don't know, for example, from Lena Kostyuchenko, who went there and she was talking about, yeah, torture prisons on the occupied territories and how people been held there just to support their own country, Ukraine. But that this is just, but we don't have that much of, you know, journalists that would be able to provide a clear report on everything, what's going on there, yeah.
We have videos, video witnesses of Ukrainian children who've been kidnapped to Russia, but then 200 of them were exchanged and back to Ukraine. And there are video interviews of what Russians were doing with children, how they were, how and using what they were like beating them with electrical cables, like knocking them in the super small rooms, like didn't give food just for like speak their own language. And this is Russia. This is what is going on. So it's definitely like the impact of propaganda definitely exists. And yes, there are people who started to be like a fascist, unfortunately, because of the propaganda, because the TV is fully controlled by the state for many years. And TV is saying that there are Nazis there and we should fight Nazis like in the Second World War. But this is not majority, for sure. Majority is scared.
Well, I'm just wondering, how did both of you grow up? Because what was your parents like when you were growing up? And I guess what was essentially their political standpoint, and kind of have they evolved? Have you seen them evolve over the years even?
Well, I was born in a very working class family, and following the old Soviet tradition of don't stand up, don't raise your voice against the government, like try to live quietly your life, otherwise you will have a problem, you have problems. So yeah, that's really didn't change that much, I'd say. Like I would still, because obviously they're scared for me. That's another point. That's another factor, as I guess as a parent, you are scared for your children. But when I was in Russia, I would use almost every minute to talk about politics with them. I would show lots of videos of Navalny's investigations. And yeah, they don't like this regime, but unfortunately they feel powerless, they feel useless. They feel like if you're gonna rise up, what the future, what will happen after? And now they can say like, oh, look at Navalny, you know, and many others. So they don't, it's like, it's so sad that it's like, they understand, they believe that they cannot change anything. And they held it as a curse, you know, that you cannot change anything here. Just try to live in those conditions. And that's very sad, because
this
what
is
they
actually
did, what have they done to deserve it?
The biggest crime which Soviet Union done with people. They basically managed to force the whole country, all nations, just stop to believe that their opinion and voice means anything. And that's happening to millions and to their sons and daughters. It goes through generations, and it wasn't stopped when the Soviet Union collapsed. So we have this legacy. I was born, so my mother, she's a programmist. My father is a mathematician. They never been involved at any dissident or political movements. They love their profession. They thought that I would be also a mathematician, but I was not. I would not. I did not. I think I step by step realized that things are wrong. I did not connect when I was a teenager, and afterwards I didn't connect things, so I started to connect them much later. But I mean, I felt a lot of injustice. For example, my son was born when I was 18, so I was very young mother, and I just felt this system on my own body, like from the doctors to the amount of money which you can, you know, receive for your life when you get birth. Like, this is around, let's say, $70 per month, which
that
is
government
not,
support,
which is not enough for anything. And I was thinking so much how privileged I am that I have home, I mean apartment, I have relatives who support me, I have father of my son who didn't run away. But so many people do not have this, and how do they live? So I start to read, I start to explore, and at any topic where you can, you know, look, this exists a lot. So yeah. And then when I ended up in prison, when I start to read dissidents, when I start to read books about how it was in Soviet Union and what people were protesting and actually what they tried to change, I just realized that nothing changed, that this is the same. They are doing with people the same. And that those people who are in power are the same KGB agents that dissidents were fighting. This is just unbelievable. Yeah. So it's kind of that.
I guess a bleak note, but do you see the only end to this being war? Like full on world war again? Is this really the only way that we can, I guess, tackle this head on? Or do you think that it can be done through voices and actions?
It depends. What do you mean by voices? There are so many voices now shouting that Ukraine should be saved. And it's just, for my opinion, and again, this is just my opinion, it's technically, physically not possible. They don't have enough resources, human resources and gun resources, like weapon resources, for now to protect themselves. They are doing like really great. They are, I mean, how do they do after the two years of the full-scale invasion is really great, but they need help. And I mean, I don't know about the World War. I don't know how it could look like in the 21st century with all the methods of hybrid wars, which like the United States was doing for like several times. But I definitely know that Putin's regime should be stopped. And I'm definitely know that it's not possible to do just from the inside. And I'm pretty sure that some things like should be fixed, like people, for example, in Russia who are running away from the war, who don't want to go to Ukraine and kill other people, should have this opportunity. They shouldn't be just locked in the country and forced to wear this fucking uniform and take the gun and kill Ukrainians. This is, I know for sure, but I mean, I can, and we all can just share our experience and hope that this experience can be useful for the people, both for people who are making decisions and for people who are electing people who are making decisions.
Anything to add to that, Olga?
Well, yeah, maybe I sounded like I asking for total war and all of that, but that's not the end goal yet. That's definitely, he needs to be stopped. We need to be united in terms of, it should be a coalition. There are people, and I'm telling you for sure, that there are people in Russia that using partisan methods to fight with Russian army, I would say. They would set on fire military offices. They would basically mess up with the railways because on those trains the weaponry goes to the war. But we can't underestimate Putin, because if you're really like thinking, oh, you know, so 2 years of the war, so many sanctions been done, applied, and but you know, you see how much they spend to buy weaponry from North Korea or from Iran or from other places, and you understand what kind of where this money are when you think of how much money been stolen, etc., etc. Yeah, I think it's very important to not underestimate Putin's ambition, and for him this is the main goal in his life right now, is to win this war. And he's not scared of sanctions. He's not scared of some, I don't know, international persecution right now while he's being inside Russia and he's still participating in this war. The only thing he's afraid is to lose his power, meaning to lose this war. So basically, it's very clear message what we need to do. Do everything for Ukraine to win this war.
Also, I want to add that stopping by Russian resources is still not the Third World War. It's just stopping sponsoring terrorists, right? Gas and oil is not like Western army forces sent to Ukraine. It's just, just to kill hypocrisy and just, stop paying terrorists. This is first thing. And second thing, Putin understands only the language of force. This is kind of, he's the KGB agent. The whole system was built on the idea of terror. This is originally red terror, which became a big terror, which became like a KGB system, which produced Vladimir Putin as he is. He's just a child, a function of this system. And this system should be definitely crushed, like using all the methods. And so it's like this.
Well, speaking of using all the methods, I myself am really excited for you guys to come here. I think everybody is very excited for this show. What can we expect? Is it kind of going to be like we see multimedia experience, but what can we really expect from that?
Right, this is based on my book, and it's actually a live book on the stage. It's a combination of the musical concerts, so you can expect a lot of music, a lot of very loud music. You can expect our original videos, which were mixed and done by Vasily Bogatov, who filmed actions of Pussy Riot and risked the same risk as us. Also, you can expect some unpredictable parts of the performance, because it's not a classical musical concert, but it's multi-genre thing. So it's my story in Pussy Riot from the first action to the last day in penal colony. It stops when I go out from this penal colony. And it shows some choices which I made during this way in activism, in prison life, inside the court cage. So it's loud, it's fun, it's serious, and it's just, like this.
I think our main goal is to inspire people to join us and to remind them again that the freedom is something that you need to fight for. And we're excited to meet all the people that we're going to meet and to see more of Canada, because we haven't been on the West Coast yet.
And the art exhibit is also going to open in Vancouver as well, right? What can the Vancouver folks expect from that?
So the exhibition is the Pussy Riot actions since the beginning to the current situation, to all our anti-war works which we done, and it's actually street actions and of Pussy Riot and reactions of the state to these actions, plus the context of where and when these actions were happening. So through our actions and reactions of the state and what was surrounding them, you can see this road to hell, which I mentioned before. And this is since 2011 until now.
I think Velvet Terrorism, this is the name of the Masha's exhibition, because this is how they've been called, Pussy Riot been called.
My exhibition. I just collected these actions.
So I think Velvet Terrorism is a great form, I would say, because it looks like a cartoon of, but also it's about this Russian hell. I talked to many people, like foreigners, that went to see this exhibition, because that's a lot of materials, I would say. And if you don't know a lot about Russia, it's still fun because it's made with big humor, and because it, yeah, if you come, you will see. Yeah, and it's a very clear, as Masha mentioned, you see the clear path to where we are now. And you see lots of fun and courage, adventures of Pussy Riot, and this terrible and sometimes funny but still terrible reactions of the government. And yeah, I recommend to visit that because it's just really,
Is it
really
far from Calgary
well
to
made.
Vancouver?
It's about a 14-hour drive.
14, 1-4.
Yeah.
Okay, guys.
Good recommendation, Olga.
Well, so
See,
but if but at some point you'll be in Vancouver, and that'd be great.
well, the just for your own context, that I think it's great that you're doing this, the cities and the dates that you are. A lot of the reason that a lot of people don't come to Canada is because it's really hard to tour here. To go from Calgary to Edmonton, which is in the same province, it's still a 3-hour drive. And it can be really bad roads and it's kind of hectic. And then once you get out of like Alberta, it becomes a 13-hour thing.
Sometimes
And
we
then go the
drive
other way.
12, 15 hours per day, so we
Yeah.
you can't scare us. We're ready for Canada. You can't scare us away. We're
and I
coming.
think to say bad roads to Russians, it's really
Yeah.
funny. We have the worst roads, I think, in Europe.
Well, Majin, Olga, I want to thank you so much for coming on. I really hope everybody goes out and checks this out. And seriously, just thank you from the bottom of my heart, everybody's heart. Keep up the good
Thank you,
work
Robert.
because we all appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Под синим небом купольным свято место не пусто и давно куплено. Ластик у власти, З значит свастика, танки на праздник. Русская классика, пока стариков украшают лентами.
Мы становимся иноагентами.
Ну груз 200, об этом не скажут вечерние вести. Закончил школу, бери автомат. По 15, знать военный плакат. Русский корабль,
иди нахуй.
Танк в болоте, будущее на плахе. Культ победы, как основа основ. Кокаин депутатский с прахом дедов. Серости, садизма, лубянский микс. А для тех, кто пиздит, лаборатория X.
Запад 10 лет поставляет ему оружие.
И мим Российской Федерации.
Нищета, убийства, приговоры, санкции.
Инакомыслие,
независимое мнение.
Откуда-то Беларусь готовилась нападение.
Грохнут не беда, отвалят бабла.
Для кого война, а для нас мать родна.
Все, дочка, мама любит тебя, пока. Красные ногти в земле, рука.
Чудовищная весна решила настать измененная, не нужна.
нужная конституция. Нам пора совершить революцию.
Пусть Москва горит,
мир на крови. Это не смыть, нечем крыть. Да хуя земли, но забрали Крым, прости.
Хотя это не простить.
Мама, я в плену, не смотри телевизор. Мама, здесь нет никаких нацистов. Мама, почему войну называют операцией специалистов? Мама, я в плену, не смотри телевизор. Мама, здесь нет никаких нацистов. Мама, почему войну называют операцией специалистов?
Украина, я тебя люблю.
Что еще не остарый.
Распятый мальчик на доске объявлений.
Сколько пошло убивать, убийцам поверить.
Замироточили карты империи.
Цены жизни переоценена. Женщина больше рожать должна.
Солдат не жалеть,
еще нарожают.
Они нас здесь
за людей не считают.
Никто не забыт,
ничто не забыто.
Ветераны едят из пустого корыта.
Счастье родины дороже жизни. Счастье родины дороже жизни.
Суверенная демократия, национальные интересы. Превентивный удар, жест доброй воли. Все не так однозначно, сами себя бомбят. Дискредитация армии, традиционные ценности. Оптимизация расходов, отрицательный рост. Стратегическое отступление, импортозамещение. Воля миллионов, донос, долг патриота. Частичная мобилизация, денацификация, ядерный пепел. Выравнивание границ, хлопок, задымление, обвал штукатурки. Никакой паники нет!
Мы вас не простим и растопчем останки. Сгорит красиво башня Останкино.
Полстраны осталось без дома.
Пьют палачи в погонах.
Заград, отряды, марш заключенных.
Ком сторожит у роддома.
Ребенок шьет военную робу.
Русское поле расстрельных полигонов.
В черном пакете крещеном едет домой русский суженый.
Проводы, мама вяжет бронежилет от холода.
Сестра сидит за антивоенные слоты.
Замещение импортом мертвыми мышами.
Замещение мужчин даренными баранами.
Замещение мозгов, Россия сегодня.
Зима уходит, приходит преисподня.
Женщины, дети истошно кричат.
Чекисты пьют чай, наблюдая закат.
Никто не услышит твою мольбу.
Росгвардия стреляет прямо в толпу. Не выражение, а перегруппировка. Не груз 200, а переупаковка. Братские могилы вырыты по ГОСТу. Просим прощения за неудобства. Просим прощения за ебалаки. Война это праздник и все в порядке.
Прости, прости.